Can you hear me? All right. Well, welcome. This is the last session of the day, so thank you for making the trip. Between now and the country drinks is just this session, so try to get it over with and hopefully make it educational for you guys. Hopefully you're here to see the data loss prevention session. If not, hopefully you'll stay and learn about data loss prevention anyway. In terms of just quick introductions, my name is Jack Kabat. I'm a lead program manager in the information protection team. Information protection team kind of covers a set of hygiene and compliance features, things like data loss prevention, e-discovery, audit, et cetera, plus things like anti-spam capabilities. I'm specifically focused on data loss prevention. I've been working on this for the last couple years, first introducing this in Exchange and Outlook 2013, and now continuing our journey that I'm about to share with you guys here. From a room perspective, how many of you guys have seen some of the stuff we're doing in Exchange and Outlook in the past? All right. And how many of you have existing data loss prevention implementations in place or have looked at having one in your organizations, either Microsoft or other? All right. A number of you guys. So when I used to start these sessions in the past, I would start off with a slide like this that would talk about kind of the reasons for data loss preventions, why we're doing all of this. This, as years have passed, there's been less of a reason to talk about why this needs to be happening. Unfortunately, there still hasn't been that much less of the events of these kinds of headlines actually happening. So obviously, the capabilities we are talking about today are to help you prevent this kinds of these kinds of events happening in your organization, and also to share with us kind of how we look at data loss prevention and what is our unique view of the problem space that we're bringing. In terms of just a quick level setting, and this is kind of similar to if you've seen this session before, just to get everyone in the same page of how we think of data loss prevention. So when we think of DLP in Microsoft Office, it's really defined as helping to identify, monitor, protect sensitive data through deep content analysis. And the four themes, if we just quickly break those down, the identification is all about identifying what is sensitive to you. And we use a combination of both content-specific identification, and that is about specific sensitive information, and contextual, and that is what is the context of an operation. Are you sharing this externally? Are you working within your organization, within a specific set of users? Next thing is monitoring, and this is around being able to apply real-time protections that are continuously evaluated as sensitive data is changing in the organization and providing you signals of what that looks like. So reports on things like policy violations, who's performing those violations, being able to get real-time notifications of those occurrences, and basic auditing and reporting capabilities. Next, we have protection. And protection really focuses, there's really a wide gamut of capabilities here, from things like auditing and user notifications to things like encryption, or maybe even applying disclaimers, to all the way to blocking the end user operation based on the kind of risk you've associated with what's going on in the system. And finally, end user education. End user education is very much one of our differentiators of how we approach the system. And it's interesting to hear Gartner talk about end user education and being able to have those aha moments from the end users so they actually realize what is sensitive data is one of the biggest values your organizations can get from a data loss prevention. To be able to have them realize what is sensitive in your organization and how they should treat that information, and also that potentially they're doing something that violates a policy. So the best way to talk about this is to actually give you guys a quick demonstration of some of this capability. All right. So what I have here is Outlook. And some of you have seen this, because I'll start off with some of the things we've had for quite a bit of time and then move forward to the new capabilities. I have a Outlook 2013. I'm Sarah Davis, and I'm connected to my tenant in the cloud. I'm going to send a notification to Tony and include some document, in this case, a document that has some form of sensitive information, in this case, credit cards. Pretty standard capability, nothing happens. Now, if I start adding additional users, for example, Jack about at Microsoft. Let's review. You can see that while I'm actually doing something in the system, in the background, we're doing scanning on the client end. And what you can see is the system has identified that there's a sensitive file being attached. Further, it's identified that there's a recipient, Jacob at Microsoft, that shouldn't be getting this content. We call this policy tip has popped out. And as this case, you can see it's actually customizable, where I've configured this to say visit Tekkit 2014 to learn more about DLP. And that's really something important to be able to communicate with your users in the kind of context they will understand. The user can look at the details of the policy tip to learn that we have found credit cards in the content, and they can even report this as a false positive to help you tune your system to make sure that you're only detecting the things you should be detecting. And finally, you know, they can go to learn more, which is a link to explain your compliance policies. What I have linked it to is just more information about data loss prevention as part of our customization capabilities. So going back to this, so this is a very simple notification. The end user is notified and made aware of the content. Now I'm going to attach another file, in this case, one that has additional information that's deemed sensitive in the organization. And you can see, again, the system reacts in real time by being able to evaluate that content and now have a very different response to the end user. The end user is now actually blocked from sending the content. If I try to send it, I will get a warning message. But at the same time, the administrator, and this is important, the administrator has decided that for this type of risk, we're going to let the end user decide. So in this case, the user has the ability to override and say, you know what, I understand this is sensitive data, but there's a reason for me that supersedes that policy that I need to be able to carry on with my business. So we're going to go ahead and put some text in, override it, the message goes away, and we can actually send this out. So that's kind of a pretty standard capability that we've had for quite some time in Exchange 2013. Now, something else to show you is I have the same thing running here in OWA, and I've configured OWA to run in what's called TinArrow, which just kind of mimics what this would look like if you had a phone or a smaller device. But this is just a pure browser running in Firefox. And I'm going to compose the same message. So again, we're going to go ahead, and this time I'm just going to add myself. And we're going to attach a document. And we're going to actually attach the same specific item. And you can see that while I've attached the document, we can also decorate the message. Let's see. It's demos. Well, I can actually, so I'm not getting the policy tip I was expected, but that's fine because I'm going to go ahead and actually send this document. And as you can see, while I am actually prohibited right within my OWA, which means wherever this is running, in a phone, a kiosk, or wherever else you're connecting to your organization's email, you're able to get the same rich client experience in the email itself. And as you can see, we actually had the tip show up while I clicked send, and you can see you can have the same rich experience for client interaction, where we're actually able to both remove the recipient. We see what kind of information is shared, and I've added a health form as part of this, and that's the Contoso healthcare form. And I can go ahead and override, just like I could in my other client, and be able to send this message. Again, pretty neat stuff, and this is something that we've added earlier this year, and this is now shipping in both Exchange 2013 Service Pack 1, and also as part of our online offering, which means wherever you get OWASP, you get the same kind of capabilities that you have seen here. Now, at the end, I've added a document called a healthcare form. That's going to be important because if you notice, the warning wasn't about a specific sensitive type. It was about a document type. And that also demonstrates a new capability we added earlier this year in terms of fingerprinting, which is a different detection capabilities for what's sensitive data. And that's a new capability that I'll dive in deeper and shows you the kind of investments we're making from both bringing DLP broader across the suite and also from a deeper investment in terms of the kind of detection mechanisms we want to be able to show you. Now, while this is all happening, in the same Outlook, I have actually logged into another account called Incidents at Contoso. And what you can see is there's been real-time notifications that have been taking place into that account as part of this demo, which means in addition to what's happening on the client end, we're doing the same kind of validations on the back end to be able to provide you a consistency policy evaluation no matter what client you use. So the client experiences are really additive to providing you a total compliance capability that's consistent no matter which client you use. So if you choose to use an older client or a client we haven't integrated with, you will get the same policy evaluation at the back end. And I'll cover this a little bit in more detail around what's in these notifications, and you have full fidelity to control what's actually being carried out. Anyway, so that's just a quick demo of what we have from a client end user experience, and that's already available from both Exchange 2013 and things we've added quite recently earlier this year. So in summary, the OWASP for policy tips capabilities, that's already been shipped earlier this year, and it works across any device you have OWASP capability on. So the next thing that we've talked about and announced yesterday was really around bringing our end user experiences broader across the suite. And what we have announced is our ability to integrate DLP policy tips and DLP backend into both SharePoint and OneDrive. So the same end user education you saw in the email clients, you're not going to be able to see everywhere you use documents in terms of SharePoint and OneDrive. And here is a policy tip that's, again, conceptually the same as what we have seen inside of the mail clients, but customized for that experience within SharePoint, where you have the same contextual policy evaluation, and the user is also empowered to do things like overrides as part of the interactions. In addition to that, we've also added the ability to provide email notifications to end users to notify them of changes in the system that may have occurred in case they didn't get a chance to interact as part of policy tips, potentially, again, because of the modality of how we're interacting with the users evolving. The emails, again, are contextual and allow you to perform further actions like overrides by following the instructions in the notifications. So that's what we're doing on a client end. And let's take a quick look of how all of this is coming together. So a quick walkthrough of how this works from a configuration perspective. And those of you who have seen this in the past, you notice this is similar yet has evolved to really talk about how we bring DLP across the workloads and no longer just siloed within Exchange itself. So we still have administrators who will go ahead and configure the DLP policy, and you will do this in one place called the Compliance Center. And you will have one set of configurations no matter what workloads you're going to be deploying policy to in. So if you think of things like classifications, once you might have to tune, there's only one place to go ahead and tune this, and then we will store this in a centralized policy store and then distribute this across whichever workloads you have decided to apply your policy to. Because again, you're in control to decide how far I want to take the policies and where should I apply these. Now you can see on the bottom, we have Exchange, we have SharePoint, OneDrive, and Outlook, which means some of the policies are distributed all the way to the client end in terms of consumption. So again, we can provide a consistent evaluation of policies no matter what your experience is. All right, so let's look at the same thing, but from a runtime perspective. So we're done the configurations, deployed the policies from a single place across all the workloads. And now from a runtime perspective, we have information workers using their tools of choice for creating content. Within that experience, we'll provide contextual evaluation of the policies to, again, educate and empower them in terms of what is the sensitive information and how they should act around it. And once they send that information to the backend, we will, again, reevaluate the policies in the servers themselves, which means the client experiences are, again, additive in terms of the protection and the consistency of policy evaluation. What this also means is our integration is a deep integration inside of Exchange and inside of all the workloads that we're adding as part of our capabilities, and I will drill on that in a minute. In addition to policy evaluation, we will also do content aggregation from an audit perspective to provide you a consistent view of what are the policy violations across any of the workloads that you have deployed your policies to into any of the violations you're seeing. So again, one place to configure, multiple places where we will, both client and server, where we'll evaluate policies, and we will also provide you a consistent view of how those policies are affecting your end users and how they're acting in the system. All right, so this is more of a review for those of you who have seen the Exchange version, and just talks about how do we actually integrate on the back end with something like Exchange. So we run right on the back end inside of Transport as part of Categorizer, and we extend the Transport Rules Agent by providing new capabilities and playing within the existing set of transport rule conditions and actions, which means you have a very rich set of capabilities to express your policy in terms of contextual and content that you want to be able to identify. The basic process is kind of twofold. We will first, when we're detecting sensitive information, we will first take the content from other attachments or body of the messages. We will then stream them into a text stream, and then we will perform analysis on the text data. And the analysis uses our heuristics of our classification engine to provide whatever analysis have been configured in the system. So that's Exchange, and that's been out for a while. Here's the same view, but for SharePoint, where again, we go ahead and have with a very deep backend integration, because fundamentally what we wanted to do is be integrated in the places that as content changes, as content is edited, as content is added or removed, we actually get notified and are able to scan and detect changes in the content to know sensitive data is entering or leaving the system. So we run in something called a content processing pipeline. This is something that's part of search. So wherever search will view new content or identify new content to build the index, we're actually added as an operator in that process. And there's actually two components we have added. One is the classification operator, which is our classification engine. This is the same classification engine that runs in Exchange. And we also worked with our partner team in Excel to provide a format handler for the Excel file types to enhance Excel content extraction to make sure that our detections are very much in line and provide the best capabilities that are possible. So now, if you look, this is integrated with the existing indexer, which means we're relying on the same crawler that feeds the index for changes for us to also know that content has changed and be classified and potentially marked as sensitive. The output of our operator actually provides content into the index itself. It's stored in a separate part of the index where it's where you need to have special permissions to view that content, but it is actually stored in the index itself. And you will see later the interesting scenarios this allows us to do by having this very deep integration at the content scanning and index level. All right, so moving along. So DLP policy rules. So you've probably seen these before. And again, what we're taking is the learnings we did from Exchange and expanding on that model to bring workload-independent, workload-agnostic capabilities. In here, we're using DLP policy rules before we had transport rules to define what a policy is. And we're using the same concepts of being able to talk about conditions and being talk about actions that should be applied to the content. These are now a little bit different because they're no longer workload specific, and they're really a little bit of an abstraction to be able to describe what are your policy objectives and what actions should be taken that are workload independent and then can be realized within the workload based on the right experience. So things like blocking, for example, will be a little different in email flow than it will be in document sharing or uploads. But the actual intent from a compliance officer perspective is the same, that no content is shared externally, for example, that's marked sensitive. We will also have the same capability in terms of a richness of actions, where we will span actions from things that are less intrusive, things like auditing, to things like encryption, things like notifications, overrides, and blocking of the operations. Again, to really allow you to map what is your organizational policy, what are your business requirements, what is your risk associated with these conditions, and map them into a policy, both contextual and content aware. DLP policy templates, again, continuing the same theme of leveraging things that worked well in Exchange, but bringing them to a mode where they're workload independent. So we will have the same notion of policy templates, which are global policies identifying, think of them as starting points of being able to create your policies either from a regulatory perspective for different regulations or for different categories, things like healthcare, PII, financial information. And this set continues to expand based on both your feedback from our field, et cetera. DLP reporting, we're continuing to evolve that as well to be workload independent and be able to show you how the policy is reacting, what kind of information are you capturing, what are potentially the users that you're affecting. We've also, even in our existing Exchange reporting capabilities, we've done improvements in terms of being able to drill into report information of a longer duration through our system. And real-time notifications, I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time on this. This is, again, something that we're continuing from what we had in Exchange, but again, making it workload independent, where there's going to be different fields in terms of what's identified in their reports, specific to the workloads, but the capability of having real-time notifications of data that's or policy violations is going to be a core piece that we preserve as we go across workloads. All right, so the next thing, so all of this will actually now come together as part of the Office 365 Compliance Center, where we're bringing together a set of compliance areas, such as auditing, archiving, discovery, encryption, and DLP, and allow you to manage them, A, all together, but two, also across applications that the various compliance areas support. So you will now be able to go to one place, Office 365 Compliance Center, where you can go ahead and manage policies that are workload independent. And DLP is exactly one of the first scenarios taking advantage of this capability, where instead of being siloed within Exchange, we're moving things into a workload independent compliance center. So let me give you a quick demo of what that looks like. All right, so I'm actually here logged in into Office 365. This is our dog food environment. This is our pre-production environment. And I'm logged into Office 365. And as you can see on the bottom, there's a number of various admin links to Exchange, Link, SharePoint, and there's one to Compliance. So I'm going to go ahead and click on this and actually go to the Compliance areas. And, you know, some of the navigation and things may still change as part of our validations and your feedback, but basically you arrive at at something that looks very much like Office 365. But if you look at it, it's focused on a set of compliance features. We're going to go ahead and go to the data loss prevention tab, which looks very similar to what you're used to if you've used this in the Exchange world, where we have a set of existing policies that are deployed in the system. What you can do next is go ahead and create policies from specific templates. The templates are from all over the world. UK, for example, PII information. Creating the template will now go through a wizard-based approach. And this is a part that's new. You're no longer just deploying them with an exchange. So you have to actually start thinking of, what location do I want to be able to push these policies into? All of this time, you're in control to decide, where do I want to take these policies? So in this case, the policy is being deployed for SharePoint, Online, and OneDrive. Exchange is grayed out, and that's something that we're going to add over time. But we're first going to focus on releasing this set of capabilities. You can select all our specific sites of both on SharePoint Online and OneDrive you want to be able to focus on for this policy. The next thing you get to is deciding what rules make up this policy. And again, this is very similar to the model we've had in Exchange, where again here you get to drill in on the rule itself, and you see the familiar model of conditions and actions. In this case, we have two conditions. We're looking for sensitive information and content that is shared externally. And I can go ahead and add any of the sensitive types we've had before. And we're continuing to enhance this list. So every couple months, we'll have additional updates. So you will see new additions to this list. And that's, again, very much based on your feedback of what some of the gaps we see that are important to you. And that's something we would definitely want to continue to hear from you on. You get to configure the min max count, and that's again how I was able to do in my first demo the ability to have a different experience based on the different risk that the organization associates with different counts. And the next condition here is outside inside my organization. So you can see as part of our changes, we've also made this wizard be a little bit more easier to grok, especially for the non-hard admins. Exchange transport rules, you know, the capability there is very rich, but in terms of the experience, it takes some getting used to in terms of the complexity it offers. So we're trying to make that easier here. The next thing we have is actions. And in this case, we've configured action for send notification. You can see that who will be receiving the notification. In this case, we've selected owner of the sites, person who's modified it, and the author. You can also go ahead and add specific people into the list from the organization. And the next thing is you get to decide if, based on the conditions in the rule, you can actually allow override of the content. So are you going to allow end users to override your policy? Or is that something that users shouldn't have privilege to, either because of the user population you're targeting or potentially because of the sensitivity of the data you actually discovered? And you can override based on the justification or a false positive. You know, and you can continue adding other actions into the policy. Incident reports is one of our real-time notifications that we generate as content is discovered. And here, we've moved this from actions into its own specific area. And the first thing you get to do is configure what is the severity level. And this is really something that will translate to reports. So in your reports, you will see reports of high, medium, low severity, and that's based on your configuration of how you see the risk of the detection. And then you get to decide if you're going to provide a notification of the detection, what will be in the content itself, and who is it going to target. And finally, there's mode where you can turn the rule on and off, and general where you can specify the name and description. And in addition to rules, there's ability to configure the name of the policy and the description. And the last part, which is interesting, we've also carried that forward from Exchange, is the ability to decide what mode are you operating in. Are you going to actually only audit the data and be able then to see what's happening in the system without affecting end users? Are you going to actually go ahead and start notifying them to begin educating them but still not change the actual flows? Or are you going to go further than that and actually enforce full policies? That's all controllable through here. So that's a quick tour of what we're doing from a unified policy perspective that will be deployable across the various workloads. All right, so again, just a quick recap. Our new compliance center is focused on bringing policy management across workloads. We've also brought in together the compliance features across the suite in one single place to manage. All right, so moving forward, sensitive content detection. We are leveraging and continuing to invest in this area of bringing new types out of the box. Think of them as starting points for you to for your policy detections. And this continues to be something that is ISV extensible, where you can add new policies or new sensitive types in this matter, or also tune the things that are available in the box to make sure you have the right level of false positives that are being tracked in the system. This is also where our classification engine is really being configured, where you get to really see, it's not just regular expressions, but it's regular expressions, dictionaries, proximities. You really get to define the heuristics of what it means to match something based on your configuration. And to give you a quick view, here are some examples of the built-in DLP content areas. I won't go through all of these, and this is not a holistic list, but just gives you a sense of how we're thinking of this, where there's really three main categories of our focus around PII, financial, and health information. And it's really global in terms of covering European countries, North America, Asia, Australia, New Zealand, and parts of Middle East. And it's really where we see the most need and interest from a DLP perspective as a technology to solve a problem. All right, so let's step a little bit deeper and talk about the content analysis process. So I've mentioned the classification engine, which is kind of at the heart of our detections. And being able to do rich content analysis is a core of any DLP system. Being able to focus specifically on identifying the right data, minimizing false positives, is a key of any successful DLP deployment. So here's a quick example using our built-in credit card number detection system of the process we go through. Well, we will start off by, again, extracting data from either attachments or the other content and get a stream of information. The next thing we'll do is do a regex analysis of that content to find any of the specific patterns that are considered interesting by definition of the function that's being classified. The next thing is some forms of identifiers having built-in checksums. National IDs, credit cards are all good examples of built-in checksums. And we'll run those checksums to make sure that what we have detected is not just a random regex pattern that matches our definition, but actually also at least matches the checksum validations that's available for the specific entity. We may, in addition, provide looking for corroborative evidence. And what that looks for is really within a proximity window of where we found the original entity, we'll look both forward and back for additional corroborative evidence. And this could be things that should be found around it. It could also things be that shouldn't be found around it. Just as important to be able to tune and get lower false positives. And finally, we'll make a verdict if this is really what we believe is the right entity we found or is potentially still a false positive. And there's two examples on the right-hand side, one which is a valid credit card number with the right checksums, which is a positive match, and the one on the bottom, which is just a 16-digit number. And that's something we've had for quite some time. The new kind of detection we've added earlier this year now is around document fingerprinting. And document fingerprinting really focuses on looking at the problem differently. Instead of identifying a single entity and building something around it, we're really looking from at a document level. So think of places that use templates. This is the right technology for those kinds of scenarios, for healthcare, a lot of legal firms, a lot of IP content, uses standardized forms. And how the system works is you would feed an empty form into the system, and the system would then detect derivatives of that form, where it's no longer looking for a specific identifier, but it's looking how much of the original form is existing in a target document. And it's just a very different way to find sensitive information, which may not be specific to identifiers or other aspects of this. So how does this actually work? There's two parts to this, configuration and runtime. From a configuration perspective, you will create a template content. And what that is you basically feed a document. That document gets text extracted. We run a set of algorithms on that and compute a fingerprint and store that information. Then at runtime, we will basically take the form, now the filled out form, in the email or anywhere else we're detecting this data, and run through the same text extraction process and generate and through the same algorithm. And now we'll have two of these fingerprints to compare, where we will check another algorithm on them to see how close these are to actually matching. Because unless, of course, you're sending the exact template you've created from, they'll actually be different. So this is an example of an algorithm that's focused on containment, which means how much of the original form is contained in your target document that you're matching. And that's something that we perform at runtime as part of our fingerprint detection technology. All right, so let's look at a quick demo of what that looks like. Let me just set up here for one sec. All right. All right, so I have a couple of these forms. And just to show you what this looks like, I can open a form, a standard health release form that's used that hasn't been filled out. And you would use this to generate something like a fingerprint. And then forms such as this one, which have some data in it, would be detected as matches based on the information you fed into the system. So how do you actually do this? Well, it's really simple. If you go to our data loss prevention page and you go under document fingerprinting, you will see there is, I already created a number of KIPIF fingerprints in here. And if I just double click on this, you can see that you give it a name, description, and basically a form like the one I just showed you that we use to generate the fingerprint. So let's go ahead and create one of these. Let's see what documents we have here. All right, so we have patent information. Try that again. Give it a description. Provide same patent information form. The system will go ahead, do text extraction, and generate a fingerprint. Perfect. Patent, let's call it TechEd. We'll go ahead and save this. All right, once you have saved this, once you have saved it, how you would use this is you would actually go into one of your existing policies, and I have one here, and probably the easiest thing is to create a new rule. There's a number of templates that you can use to make the rule creation easier. And here we're going to block the message unless they provide an override. And the template already comes pre-configured with things outside the organization. And to use your template, you're going to go ahead and select sensitive information. And it should be available right within the existing list of sensitive information. So there's the healthcare form I used before. And there's patent tech ed. I'm going to go ahead and add that in. And then you can use any of the other conditions and actions as part of the configuration like you would anywhere else. And that will enable you to use a policy that has fingerprinting as part of it. The biggest aspect of this is making sure you use this in places where you already have forms as part of your business processes, where you already have forms as part of how users deal with information. All right, so moving along. So far we've been showing you both things that have been announced right now and showing you the journey of things as we extend our types of detections and also extend the breadth of where DLP is. This is also something we've just announced, and that's basically another form of detection based on metadata. And this is, again, a little different than what we've done before. And specifically, this focuses on, instead of looking at the content, I'm going to look at the properties or the markings of the documents. So instead of looking for sensitive information inside of the document, I'm going to leverage the fact that somebody else might have already tagged this document. How many of you are familiar with Windows FCI system? All right, some people. So FCI is something that's been available for some time from Windows File Server, and it's a file classification infrastructure which allows you to classify content on Windows file servers. And it can be used based on manual classifications, for example, by users placing documents in certain locations. It can be used by auto classification, and it can be used by third parties to extend it as well. But one of the things that FCI will do is as the content leaves the file server, it will actually add tags to the files themselves. So this is something that we can then take advantage of and be able to then rely on these tags as the content is passing through the system, which means we're really taking advantage of classifications that have occurred elsewhere, but potentially by end users placing them in specific locations. Things like, if I place it on this file share, it will be HBI. On this file share, it will be considered low business impact, LBI. But third parties also use this form of classification of content, and we then can consume that as part of our policy evaluation. The main point here is we're really trying to provide a system where you get to decide of how you organize your information, how do you actually decide what is sensitive, and then use our capabilities to craft policies that match your business processes and business needs in the organization. And so on the bottom is a quick workflow in terms of how FCI works, but third-party system work in a similar way, where they'll discover data, classify it, and then actually store the classification properties, and we can leverage that data as part of Office 365 policy application. So when we look at the actual metadata classifications, we offer both built-in types, and that is common types that are available in both Windows File Server and also come from standards such as NIST in terms of saying, and they form in a number of areas around information privacy, information security, legal and organizational tagging of content. So these are both built-in, but also our system allows you to use custom properties you might have created yourself. So let's take a quick look of what that looks like. All right, so I'm actually going to go ahead and just open a document. and show you. So we have a sample document. This is health records verification, just an Excel file. And there's nothing really that interesting about this file. It doesn't really have any rich identifiers. It has a plan number and I guess some form of expenses based from that have been tracked. But one thing that is interesting about the file is if you look at the properties, the file has custom properties, things around PHI and confidentiality that have been marked on the file by some third-party system. So now what you're able to do is you can go ahead and create a policy, and in that policy you can create a rule that I've created here that will actually allow you to detect content that has been tagged externally. So we're going to go ahead and open this rule. And this rule has some of the things we've seen before around being able to use predicates for outside of the organization condition. But there's a new predicate around has these properties including any of these words. And this has already been pre-configured to use PHI is assigned 3000 and protected health information is high. And what you can do is you can go ahead in here and add additional properties. And there's the built-in types. So we're going to say personal use, no, and add that to the list of properties we're detecting. But you can also go ahead and specify custom properties, such as that the file is demo file. And these properties are all stored and evaluated at runtime. And we're no longer looking for the content in the file itself, but just how the file has been marked by potentially third-party system or by end users themselves. And you can, again, use the same set of conditions and actions to potentially encrypt the file, block it from being submitted, put it in quarantine, or any of the other actions we have in the system today. Anyway, that's a quick look at the new capability around metadata content. All right, so let's continue on. So we've already covered a pretty rich gamut of investments we've made in DLP, talking around the new types of detections we've introduced over the last year, and also the breadth of capabilities of where DLP is actually being able to be integrated or being integrated in Office 365. SharePoint obviously being a big aspect of that, and we've had announcements of that yesterday. But something, we've already had SharePoint integration as the first step that we released earlier in the summer that shows how we already integrate in terms of a search experience. And what this really is we're already being able to scan sensitive data and then provide a very valuable scenario for an organization to query their content in SharePoint or OneDrive and discover what content is actually, what sensitive data is already uploaded to SharePoint or OneDrive. So to do this, we've integrated, again, with the CTS pipeline and also provided the functionality through our eDiscovery capability. How many of you are familiar with the eDiscovery capabilities that Microsoft provides? All right, a number of you. So what we've done is we've actually integrated into extended the KQL syntax to be able to look for sensitive information as part of the queries. And as you can see, it uses full KQL syntax, which means you can provide any of the conditions or any of the together to be able and any of the Boolean operators to create rich queries. We're also providing statistics as part of your searches, and you can provide and we integrate with the same preview and export capability that's already available as part of eDiscovery. All right, so let's see what that looks like. So we'll log into another tenant here. All right, so I'm logged into another tenant inside of what's called the eDiscovery Center, and that's something that's been a shipping product for a while in terms of being able to discover specific content, place it on hold, do searches, and export. And eDiscovery uses the concept of cases to mark and organize its information. So we're going to go to our cases here. And what I have is created two cases. First one is EU case. And again, just pure integration with eDiscovery. And they use the concept of queries. And under queries, I have a PII sensitive information query that I've pre-configured. So what you can see here is the query uses a new syntax for looking for sensitive information. And specifically now, I'm just looking for sensitive type equals credit card number. And we're going to do a search of this across the various scopes that are available in eDiscovery. So this could be across OneDrive. This could be across SharePoint. Any place you have your eDiscovery capabilities available. So we're going to go ahead and do a search. And you can see we found 10 documents that contain a credit card number. And from you can do previews of these documents where you could actually open up the documents and actually inspect them. You can do a full export of the content. And the export allows you to export both the content of the documents, but also allows you to export specific locations where these documents have been found. So that was interesting. We were able to find credit card numbers. Now, I can replace this with really any of our sensitive types to be able to look for other content. And because of our deep integration into content processing, as the content changes and is added or removed or modified, we're continuously classifying that content and adding it as part of the index. The other thing is, I mean, as you notice, we can search for content based on how many of the sensitive types are identified. Well, we can do the same thing here, where instead of looking at all sensitive types, all finds of credit card number, I'm going to look for things that have two or more credit cards, in this case, 2 to 5. So we're going to modify our search, and now we're down to 3 documents that contain between 2 and 5 credit cards each that have been identified. And you can search across your whole tenancy to see how many of these documents are in OneDrive and within SharePoint sites. I can also go ahead and modify this and just type and just look for any sensitive types. And if we do this search, we see now 28 documents that have been identified that have any of the sensitive types that we're searching for and crawling within SharePoint. Now, we can even use the full power of KQL, and I have some cheat notes around providing multiple expressions where I can go ahead and easily search for both content that has social security numbers and credit card numbers or credit card numbers found in the site. And if I do this, I'm down to 14 results of how many of these content exists. This is, again, using normal KQL syntax, so I can provide any forms of the concatenations. And here I'm looking for, there's no documents that have either one of these. And if I look further, I'm going to type in one more query here where I'm searching not only for social security numbers and credit cards, but also for documents that have been authored by myself or any user in the system for that matter. And you can see that we reduced that from 28 documents to 12. And this is, again, an example of the kind of scenarios that are possible by us having a deep integration into our workloads, into things like SharePoint, where I'm beginning to be able to take full advantage of the index, where I'm combining both the sensitive information and the other information that's stored in the index to unlock new scenarios that weren't before possible. Anyway, so this is also something that's been available for several months, and it's something that's been rolled out worldwide in the service. Any questions on this? I'm kind of rushing through. I had a lot of content, so I wanted to see if maybe take some questions for things you guys have been seeing. All right, no questions. All right, so let's keep moving. So DLP extensibility. So this is something that we've had for quite some time in terms of being able to not only provide you the right built-in capabilities and starting points, but also provide you more capabilities beyond that. And specifically, we know that obviously we can't, we can only cater to global identifiers or global content, but there are other interesting things beyond that in terms of being able to identify sensitive information. And we've been able to both tune our existing content and create your own content within our system that our classification engine can then detect and you can author policies on. So that's a form of the kind of extensibility we have. Here's an excerpt from one of the definitions of our classification content that shows you a little bit of the richness behind our classification engine. And specifically here, we have a definition for a social security number where you can define multiple confidence levels that you're searching for. So if you look at, and what that means is, perhaps for some entities, the types of detections aren't perfect, which means you don't have the power of checksums, you don't have the power of built-in verifications, and you need to apply other heuristics to be able to get and tune your false positives. So in the first pattern here, with confidence level of 85, I'm looking for a built-in function for social security number. And in addition to that, I have corroborative evidence here that will also find at least one of from a list of keywords of social security numbers, a list of specific dates or a date function, I should say, and a US address all within the proximity of the social security number. All of these things being true, we will return as an 85 level confidence that we found a social security number. However, I may also want to be able to detect lower confidence social security numbers that may or may not be social security numbers, but I may want to provide analysis of that document. So here we have a confidence level of 65, where we've relaxed our identification technique to match for only, so we're looking for unformatted social security number, which will have a higher false positive rate, and we're also looking for specific keywords of, or actual functions of date and address within the proximity. We're no longer looking for additional keywords. Because we believe there's a higher chance of false positives, we're going to assign a different confidence, a confidence of 65, to being able to find that content. And again, this is an example of the kind of heuristics you can write within our classification engine, and then layer on top of this a set of policies. So in this example, if I have a confidence level of 85, I will likely apply a stronger action than if I have a confidence level of 65, where I'm less sure that this is content that has been actually is true social security numbers. So in one case, I may be able to block the users. In the other case, if only confidence level 65, I may ask the user to potentially override because I'm not that sure that we've actually found the right entity. And this applies to both our built-in content that we provide to you, and you can apply the same heuristic to your own things, like employee IDs, healthcare identifiers for specific providers. All of that capability from an extensibility point exists in the product and has from the beginning. Another area of extensibility around incident reports. And I've already showed you what these look like, but that's an area where you can also integrate with things like ticketing systems, where the endpoint listening to the incident reports is something that can generate a set of tickets in the system and potentially create richer workflows for notifications or initiate tickets within the system that are then triaged by some set of compliance officers looking at the events in the system. reporting solutions. So we've worked with partners like Dell to actually create a set of reporting capabilities that consume our DLP data and then be able to integrate into their existing message stats reporting product our DLP detections and make their reporting solutions richer and more valuable to the customer. And finally, everything you've seen here today is actually configurable through a remote PowerShell. What that means is all the configuration, no matter if it's happening in the cloud or on-prem, can actually be configured through a remote PowerShell from an object model perspective and also from an automation perspective. And again, this is stuff that has been available for quite some time. Any questions? All right. So kind of wrapping things up, just showing you the journey through the various evolutions of our DLP feature set from initially Exchange and Outlook 2013, where we first provided a very dedicated feature set for the email workload. And we've started with deep content analysis, our classification engine, have contextual user education. That's been always a big area of our focus, be able to educate and empower end users, and have started off with built-in sensitive types for detections to provide quick starts for your deployments. Incident reporting, rich reporting has also been part of our solution to make sure you have the right audit capabilities as part of the feature set and ability to extend what we provide out of the box with ISV and customizations has been from the beginning. Then the next wave of investments were both in terms of providing deeper detections, and that's things like fingerprinting, and also a breadth of where we actually apply the DLP policy capabilities. So this is things like Outlook integration, where we can now have mobile experiences that have the same rich experiences to end users as our built-in Outlook capabilities. And also going deeper with things like document fingerprinting, where that's integrated both on the back end, but also being integrated across the end user experiences as well. And at the same time, we continue to enhance our built-in types, and that's something that we continuously evolve based on both your feedback and new information that we find in terms of from our field and folks that we work with. Reporting is another area where we've heard feedback of being able to provide longer retention periods, and that's something that we made available earlier this year as well, in terms of being able to get rich reporting and more detailed for all their content. So extended enhanced reporting and extended reports are something that's shipped earlier this year as well. And finally, the things that we're making available now, and that's really bringing DLP beyond the email workload and into SharePoint itself with the ability to search for sensitive information within SharePoint and OneDrive. Again, that's something that's been available for a couple months, and I demoed a minute ago. Plus, moving forward with policy application right within SharePoint, so that as new content is discovered, added, and modified, we can still trigger real-time policy application and evaluation in the system. That's something that's coming very shortly. And if you're interested in potentially participating in our early adopter program, please come see me. It's something that we're looking for to get customers signed up in terms of looking at the next phase of our DLP and SharePoint capability set. And I think that's most of what I had to cover, so I'm happy to take questions. I also have a set of resources for you guys to go deeper and understand the content. And I'm happy to take questions right now. Could you come up to the mic?
Can we just do it here, maybe?
Sure.
Is there any plans to go on premise with these tools? So you can go on your local share up on your sure. file servers?
So the question is there any plans to go on-premise with this feature set? And this majority of our capabilities are already actually available from on-premise perspective. All the email capabilities are things that we have integrated. And we're continuously evaluating of when's the right time for us to see this capability come into on-prem. So it's something under consideration. We don't have a specific announcement of when this capability would be announced and which version of the product from an on-prem perspective. Anything else? All right, if there's no more questions, I wanted to thank you for your time. This was valuable. And if you are interested in having your customers or any of your tenants participate in some of our early SharePoint adoption programs, please let me know. Thank you.